Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Hurricane Katrina's death toll is quickly rising, maybe into the thousands. Many survivors are desperate in New Orleans. Looting has spread. Martial law has been declared. New Orleans Mayor Rare Nagin says it could be months before people can return to their homes. That alone is mind-boggling. And then there's this. What would they return to? A city in ruins? The Gulf Coast is ravaged. The Pentagon is mobilizing a massive rescue and relief mission with 30,000 National Guard and active duty troops expected to arrive by the weekend. But there are huge challenges and questions about the future, including whether New Orleans should be rebuilt to what it was last week, or if there should be a new plan. This hour on Point, how and whether to rebuild New Orleans and the future of the Gulf Coast post-Katrina. You can join the conversation. You've seen the pictures. Can, should New Orleans be rebuilt? And what's it going to take to bring back the Gulf Coast? Are you ready to put your cash and your shoulder to the wheel? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Atlanta is Stephen French, director of the Center of Geographic Information Systems and professor of city and regional planning at Georgia Tech. Stephen French, thank you for being with us.
Hello, how are you?
We're well. And from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, Tompas Campanella joins us. He's professor in the Department of City and Regional Planning at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, co-editor of The Resilient City, How Modern Cities Recover from Disaster. Tompas Campanella, thank you for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Stephen French, it's just overwhelming, the news, as it pours in here. The mayor saying everybody out, shots fired on a military helicopter near the Superdome. Evacuation there has stopped for now. The head of the ambulance service there saying that they're supposed to be getting people out, but they've stopped because of the shots. The National Guard said they'd send 100 military officers. He said, no, we need 1,000, and that's just one little piece of this picture. Where do you put the destruction of Hurricane Katrina on a scale of storm destruction, national disasters, natural? Stephen French.
Well, it's certainly one of the worst disasters we've seen in this country. Certainly the Galveston hurricane may have claimed more lives, but I believe the property losses from this are going to be probably the worst we've seen in this country.
And the kind of mobilization it's going to require, Tom Campanella, to respond to this, is it something the United States has done before? Is there a pattern for this, or is this something new?
I think in modern times, in recent decades, this kind of scale of operation has not been seen in the United States. But certainly, we're more than capable of dealing with something like this.
The question, Stephen French, among others, we want to look at this hour is: given what we see in New Orleans, should the goal be to bring New Orleans back to what New Orleans was really last weekend? Or given that it's a soup bowl, that it's naturally situated in such a vulnerable spot, do we need a whole new plan for this city?
Well, there's always sort of the opportunity to replan after a disaster event, but that's rarely taken advantage of. In the 1994 floods, we saw some moving of small villages, but I think it's clear that New Orleans will be restored. Whether it will be restored to what it was before the event, I suspect maybe not. I think that the investment, there are going to be economic issues that really preclude investment to bring it back to what it was.
Tom Campanella, you've got a brother who's been in New Orleans recently, lives there. Been paying close attention. What do you hear from him? Is he looking forward to New Orleans being what it was, or is this just a break point for that city?
Well, at this point, he's desperately trying to get out of the city. There's really no question that New Orleans will be rebuilt. The talk about, is this the end of New Orleans? Is the city really finished here? Is really a little bit on the ridiculous side. History shows us, especially in modern times, that no major city has been completely destroyed and abandoned and wiped away, even though subjected to really horrific disasters, whether from nature or from the belly of a warplane. Hiroshima, Tokyo, Dresden are all vital cities today. Tangshan, the city of Tangshan in North China, lost almost 500,000 people in an earthquake in 1976 within a matter of minutes, and yet that city bounced back within a decade or so as a major urban center today. The Great Chicago Fire, you know, 1871, wiped that city out, but also led to one of the greatest periods of city building and reconstruction in American history. And the list goes on and on. Cities are really difficult to kill. They're extraordinarily resilient.
We take your point, and we're rooting for the people of New Orleans, certainly not against them, and yet the reports coming out of there are just mind-boggling. I'm looking here. Hugh Kaufman, senior policy analyst at the Environmental Protection Agency, says this is the worst case. There is not enough money in the gross national product of the United States to dispose of the amount of hazardous material in the area. Just for starters, Michael Brown, Undersecretary of Homeland Security for Emergency Preparedness, I surmise that there are people in New Orleans who will not be able to get back to their homes for months, if not forever. It will be a Herculean undertaking. Stephen French, is this over the top, or is it just that big a challenge?
Well, I think it's that big a challenge. I think one of the effects that has not really come to light yet is there's going to be a massive loss of wealth to individuals and residents of New Orleans. In a typical hurricane, much of the damage, like Andrew or the four we had last summer, much of the damage is covered by insurance.
Mm-hmm. And not here?
But private insurance does not cover flood damage. You have to have a separate policy through
right.
the National Flood Insurance Program. And what I have found is about half of the people in New Orleans do not have flood insurance. And my back-of-the-envelope calculations estimate the uninsured losses could run as high as $30 billion, and that will come out of individual household and family wealth. And that's going to be – what that means is that the rebuilding will probably be – even slower than we've seen for typical hurricane or earthquake events. So I suspect New Orleans is going to be rebuilt at a much slower pace than we've seen, say, after the Northridge earthquake or Hurricane Andrew.
And all those people will talk about what we're going to do with them, what they're going to do for the time in between. Thomas Campanella, we're looking here at the reports. I mean, first they've got to pump this city dry. The Army Corps of Engineers people are saying that will take a minimum of 30 days. Then they've got to flush the drinking water system to get out all the contaminants. They're saying another month for that. Then you've got to have electricians out there with snakes in the water and wild animals and feral dogs in this toxic slush. Power grid, we're being told, may not be up for weeks, maybe months before everybody's lights come back on. What happens to a city in all those soggy, toxic, intervening months? What happens to the infrastructure, for starters?
Well, obviously, we're facing a total disaster here. I mean, this is a really bad situation. It will indeed take a very long time for these basic systems, basic services to come back online. But I think it's important to recognize that the recovery of the city is going to also involve, not just the engineering end, not just the reconstruction of buildings and repairing the infrastructure, but fixing the torn social networks, the social fabric, the economic systems, the political institutions, the cultural fabric of the place. And this, too, is going to take a very long time. So, New Orleans is facing an unbelievable challenge here. This is about as bad as it can get. And this is a city, as has been, we're touched on a minute ago. Cities vary quite a bit in their resilience. Not every city is enormously resilient. New York proved to be quite resilient in the wake of 9/11, but it also had the benefit of being New York, sitting on top of the world, sort of. And New Orleans, on the other hand, was already burdened with huge social and economic problems long before this storm came along. And you know, short of a biblical plague or something, this really was the last thing that the city needed.
Stephen French, look on down the Gulf Coast with us for a moment. New Orleans is by no means the only place that's taken the hit. We've seen miles and miles of coastline just washed away. Is New Orleans unique because it sits in this below sea level bowl? Will it be easier, though monumental, to work on the rest of the Gulf Coast?
Yeah, I think we're going to see the coastal towns, Gulf Shores, Biloxi, they're going to come back and be rebuilt, I think, at a rapider pace than what we're going to see here. We've certainly seen that with past hurricanes on the North Carolina coast and in Florida. People really like the aesthetics of the coast, and while there's a lot of risk, typically we see the rebuilding actually come back and put bigger, more expensive buildings and infrastructure at risk. So the history of the Gulf Coast has been one of repeated destruction but increased building over time in those coastal areas. I would expect to see that. I think that's going to fare much better than New Orleans.
But a huge, huge effort. Many bodies still being pulled out. Never mind, the whole block's just washed away. In New Orleans, the whole area, a center of so much petrochemical refining, of grain transshipment, and that all stopped right now. The whole Mississippi outflow of American agriculture bottled up. Stephen French at Georgia Tech and Tom Campanella at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stand by. We've got to take a short break here. We are talking about how and whether, in what form, to rebuild New Orleans and the future of the Gulf Coast post-Katrina. It is an enormous challenge. You've seen the pictures. Can it be done? Can this city, this coast, again be what they were? Should New Orleans be what it was? Should it be a different city on the other side of Hurricane Katrina? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about how and whether, in what shape, to rebuild New Orleans and looking at the future of the entire Gulf Coast ravaged post-Katrina. You can join the conversation. What is it going to take to get this region back on its feet? What should it look like when it's on its feet? Are you ready to put your shoulder, your tax dollars, your personal dollars to the wheel? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined from Atlanta by Stephen French at Georgia Tech, from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, by Thomas Campanella, co-editor of The Resilient City, How Modern Cities Recover from Disaster. You can join us as well, 1-800-423-TALK. I'd like to ask each of you about this toxicity issue, if I could. Washington Post today is saying that Louisiana has been known for its weak enforcement regulations. They're quoting again the EPA chief in this area as saying that there are thousands of tons of hazardous material there, that even when it's flushed out of New Orleans, this witch's brew, he calls it, is going to sit in the Gulf of Mexico and continue to be an environmental issue. What's involved in this kind of flushing and cleanup, Stephen French?
I don't believe we've ever seen this kind of an event really hit this this place with a place with as much petrochemical and other environmentally dangerous chemicals. So I'm not sure we've seen something of this scale. Typically, it's much more localized, can be contained and dealt with. Certainly, the ability to flush that out of the city is one thing, but the impact on the wetlands and the fisheries of the Gulf Coast, I'm not sure we even have a good model of that.
Tom Campanella, we're talking about heavy metals, hydrocarbons, industrial waste, human waste, decayed remains of human and animals, and the notion that it will linger in the Gulf of Mexico, again, the Washington Post reporting here, for a decade after Hurricane Katrina. Is that just a constant threat to health? Does that put a damper on the rebuilding or the willingness to rebuild?
Well, it's certainly a major problem, but I don't think it will put too much of a hindrance on the reconstruction and recovery process. I think that, you know, we lived with polluted harbors in New York and Boston and elsewhere, horrifically polluted water bodies for many, many decades. And we got along. Certainly, this isn't a good situation, and certainly it does need to be cleaned up. And the shock waves of this pollution are going to be felt throughout ecosystems and economic systems. But I don't see it as an impediment to the recovery of this area.
We got along. I'm hearing you saying this isn't really different from the whole genre of catastrophe we've seen in other places. But I'm reading that it is. The scale of toxicity here is beyond what we've seen, is different from what we've seen, and is sitting in this big puddle that is New Orleans.
Yeah, this is unprecedented in that sense, in the sense that it's obviously the result of a sudden catastrophe. I guess what I was referring to was the pollution levels of water bodies approximate to major American cities, that it's really only in recent years that we've cleaned up Boston Harbor or other water bodies in the United States, and they were horrifically polluted as well. And if you look at the ecosystems there, the recovery has been extremely quick, very, very fast. So nature has a way of recovering quite quickly from even very horrific kinds of negative impacts.
Mm, but a decade sitting in the Gulf, we're told, sounds like a long time. And right now, of course, it's sitting in people's homes and businesses. Right. Steve is calling from Waterloo, Iowa. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you. What do you think?
I do not believe that New Orleans should be rebuilt. I feel that it's just insanity to consider that. We need to have intelligent looking into the future. How many of these hurricanes are going to happen in the next 100 years or the next 200 years, and how much more tragedy and how much more pollution and disaster assistance will be needed? It's time to rethink the whole idea of coastal living and what that means. We have to look into the future.
Stephen, let me just ask you, that may be easy to say sitting in Iowa, but what about the people who live in these areas? Where do your heart and mind go when you look at their situation?
Well, certainly it's a tragic and horrible situation. My heart and mind goes to this, don't repeat this. This, don't build it so that it's repeated again and again and again over decades. My thought is that, you know, the population center should be moved to safer ground further north. The historical parts of New Orleans should be preserved. Of course, the industry that needs to be there could be reconfigured to be safer in the event of hurricane. But that to rebuild a major population center in a known path of future storms, the same as in Florida, cities originally developed sort of willy-nilly. You know, somebody came up on a hill and said, this is a nice place to live, and it got built and it expanded. But in our modern times, we know about the reoccurrence of hurricanes. We know about the reoccurrence of these sort of things.
Yeah, we hear it. We hear it exactly, Steve. And thank you for your call. Stephen French, how about it? Our hearts are entirely with the people suffering here. But as Steve, our caller from Iowa, says, who wants this to be repeated for their own sakes? Should there be a different model for reconstruction? Or is, in the moment of tragedy, of destruction, do humans just, you know, always say, we're going to put it right back the way it was? Should we be thinking differently here?
There's tremendous psychological and sociological pressures to return to the situation before the event took place. People want to rebuild. They want to restore what has been taken from them. And I think you'll see tremendous pressures. It's very rare that we can actually relocate even small communities of 4,000 or 5,000. We've had some experience with that in Illinois and in several other places in the Midwest.
But they're relocated right now. They're being bused to Houston, to the Astrodome. They're all over the inner Gulf region, and these homes, we're told, won't be habitable, many of them, for months. People saying, you know, here's the Undersecretary of Homeland Security saying, I think a lot of people are never going to come back.
I tend to agree with that. I think a lot of people will not be able to come back because of the wealth effects I was talking about before. But
right.
You also need to think about the loss of employment. These folks are not going to have jobs in New Orleans for the next 3 months, maybe 6 months. they're going to decide at some point that maybe living in the Astrodome is not all that appealing, and try to find alternative routes, other alternative ways forward, and that may well lead them not to come back. My sense is that it's not going to come back to be as vibrant and as large a city as it has been.
I want to hear a voice direct from the region, someone very familiar with the work that's been done and that will need to be done. We're joined by Robert Bow from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He's owner of Bow Brothers Construction, started doing business in New Orleans in 1909. In 2004, it was the fifth largest company in New Orleans. In March of last year, Bow Brothers Construction began work for the New Orleans District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers on a $36 million sector gate complex for flood protection. Robert Bow, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Tom.
What happened to your project? Was it late? Was it still in under construction when Katrina hit?
Oh, yes. It's a multi-year project that we were only a year and a half into, so we had to abandon that job and all of our work, and now we're trying to assess the damage in whatever way we can. Many areas are off limits still, so we're trying to put the pieces back together. Our main office is in downtown New Orleans, and we're unable to access it or our computer system, so we're very hindered with communication, but we're doing the best we can.
Robert Bow, we read in the last day and a half that there were funding cuts in recent years that led to less reinforcement of the levees than had been planned and desired. You know, the finger-pointing has begun. What do you make of that?
I think that's a shame. I think engineers do their job the best they can, and I'm not really aware of situations that we've seen where things were under-designed.
But were they underfunded? We've got top officials in Washington saying money went to Iraq, not to New Orleans.
Well, you have to remember that New Orleans was the recipient of a tremendous influx of federal dollars in the late 90s for flood control.
Mm-hmm.
And over the last couple of years, that funding has definitely fallen off. So by that measure, yes, we have drastically reduced the investment by the federal government in flood control projects over what it was in the late 90s.
Mr. Bow, can you just look at New Orleans with us for a second and describe, if we want to bring New Orleans back to what it was last week, what's going to be required in broad physical terms with these breached levees? As an engineer looking at this, what's the challenge? How do you look at it?
Well, the challenge is going to be huge. The water has to be controlled and then pumped out, which is going to take some time. Many of the structures that were underwater and will be underwater for that length of time are going to be unstable and have to be demolished. The infrastructure of the city under the ground is going to have to be assessed, water, sewer lines,
mm-hmm.
Utility of all types. So roads, bridges, I mean, you know, you're going to start over in a lot of ways.
You must be looking this at a number of levels. I mean, as someone who knows New Orleans well, the tragedy is clear here. As a businessman, there's a big opportunity here. The question's been raised this morning of whether New Orleans should be rebuilt or rebuilt as it was. What do you say to that, Robert Bow?
I think the tragedy that has occurred in our part of the country is something that ought to be of interest to every American, and I think federal funding is the only way that our area will be able to rebuild. And I think the whole concept of flood protection is going to have to be looked at in the way those investments are made. But
would you rebuild it differently? Would you rebuild it a new New Orleans?
That's a great question, and I haven't had time to think about that. I think that'll have to be looked at, but I think our part of the world, with the port we have and with the culture we have, is too important to let it go. It may have to be redone differently.
And are you worried? You've got a population formerly there of about 500,000. Are you worried that some significant portion of those people now being bussed and whatnot all over the place just won't come back?
Well, I think in the short run, people are going to need to work, and they're going to have to go where work is. And if the work's not available in our city for the reasons we all understand, some of them may not come back. I think that's a real threat.
Robert Bow, please stand by. I want to get a caller in here. Mark is calling from Gaithersburg, Maryland. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. How are you? First, quickly, just my sentiments and condolences to everyone down in the Gulf region.
We are with you on that.
Yes, I live in the Mid-Atlantic, and I'm an avid meteorological buff. My father was a meteorologist, and I kind of watch this thing form and pull up through the Gulf the way it has been predicted for so many years. Actually, we're going back 50, 60 years, and the weather models and so forth. And I've never been to New Orleans, and it's very sad to me to think of the economic challenges, the sociological challenges that sit ahead.
They're just astounding. Should it be rebuilt? Should it be rebuilt the way it was, Mark?
I think. Well, I'll tell you. I'm a carpenter, so I do understand. We do a lot of refurbishing and a lot of additions, and we do a lot of work which requires reconditioning, old structures. And it's quite. I'm not an engineer, but I can tell you, it's going to be an incredible challenge. I think that New Orleans should stay. It shouldn't go away. But I think that the smartest thing would be if it's economically feasible. And of course, this is not just going to require the resources that we have within our own country, but a lot of people are not going to be able to come back. I think that there's such an economic diversified population in the New Orleans and Baton Rouge area that
what are they going to do? Mark, we've got it. We appreciate your call. Robert Bowe, I know we just got you for another minute here. Are your crews out already working? Are you part of the effort to get the levees back in shape, get Pontchartrain back in its borders?
Yes, we have 8 activities going on right now for different owners that have called us for help, and we're trying to piece together crews and equipment, and we've actually mobilized already at the site of the major levee breach, and we are trying to follow directions of the Corps of Engineers to try to solve that problem. So, yes, we are. One of the challenges we have is communication. We're having a hard time getting in touch with our own employees, so if anyone out there hears this program, it would be a great help to me if they would call into our Baton Rouge office, where we've set up a command post to try to field all these requests.
So all hands on deck, you can use the help?
We can certainly use the help, and we're trying to deploy people and equipment.
What's the number there, Mr. Bowe, the phone number you've got?
It's 225-753.
And the area code?
225-753-0100.
Great. If you want to help, call. Robert Bowe, owner of Bowe Brothers, one of the biggest construction companies in New Orleans, we wish you good luck, and we appreciate your being with us this hour.
Thank you, Tom.
Let's take another call. Felicia's calling from Boston. Hi, Felicia. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
We're great. What do you think?
All right. Well, I'm from Louisiana, and my family's down in Baton Rouge, and I have a lot of friends who lost everything in New Orleans. And I do think that the city needs to be rebuilt, and I'm not an engineer, so I don't know how you go about doing that. But I definitely think that you have to rebuild the city of New Orleans. But part of the problem, it's a very charming city, but I've always said I love it, but I would never want to live there because it's a very dirty, dangerous city.
Never more dirty and dangerous than right now.
Yeah, you can see it, no doubt.
So in rebuilding, what are you suggesting?
I think, you need to focus on education down there and educate people and make it a more attractive city for people to come to do business. Because, I mean, it is a very charming city, but it's terrible, all the jazz that was down there and all that's lost forever. But I definitely think you need to rebuild the city. I don't know how you do it.
Well, we're not going to give up on New Orleans jazz. We're not going to give up on New Orleans. But it is an interesting question, what shape it should take on the other side. Yes?
Well, I just want to say that touches on the subject of which New Orleans. I mean, the city. There are cities of New Orleans, so to speak. There's not just one. The city isn't just one monolithic thing.
Right. We've got the French Quarter always comes to mind, Bourbon Street and the Preservation Hall and all that, but that's not it.
Sure. It's not it at all. I mean, there's the many, quite impoverished urban neighborhoods surrounding that area that we're obviously hearing a lot about now, but that were largely invisible to most people in the past. I think we need to be careful about when we talk about reconstructing and the recovery of this city, that it recovers as a comprehensive and real city, and not just a kind of theme park for conventioneers and tourists and collegiate partiers. but that the entire city. And so I think the real resilience of New Orleans is going to depend on the recovery of the Ninth Ward, you know, and those neighborhoods, as well as on the recovery of the French Quarter and the Garden District.
Theme park, more than a theme park. What should be done with New Orleans? What about that whole Gulf Coast? Thomas Campanella, Stephen French, please stand by. We're talking about how and whether to rebuild New Orleans and the future of the Gulf Coast post-Katrina. We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com. And Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about how and whether to rebuild New Orleans and the future of the Gulf Coast post-Katrina. You can join the conversation. You've seen the pictures. Can it be done? Can this city, this coast, again be what it was? Should New Orleans be exactly what it was? Or should it be a different city? Should it be? Can it be? 1-800-423-8255 is the number. 1-800-423-TALK. We've been joined this hour by Stephen French at Georgia Tech, joining us from Atlanta, from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, Thomas Campanella at the University of North Carolina, author, co-editor of The Resilient City. Right now, Gene is calling from Toronto. Gene, what do you see? What do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, New Orleans is my heart and soul. I was born and raised there, although I live in Toronto now. Mm. And I've seen this horrific upheaval, and I think that this country can do anything it sets its mind to. I mean, after World War II, we initiated the Marshall Plan, and I think we need something on the scale of a Marshall Plan to go in there and rebuild the city and make it better. I love New Orleans, and I'm the last person to criticize it, but there was a young woman calling from Boston, from Baton Rouge, and I agree with her. They had terrible spots in New Orleans. The schools are underfunded. The infrastructure is underfunded. But
Gene, what about the critique that says, look, we heard earlier from Iowa, this city sits in a bowl, a soup bowl, we heard it called. Anytime a hurricane of size comes here, it's going to be vulnerable again. I mean, we want to be completely sympathetic, but yet should it be rebuilt exactly where it is?
I mean, Holland has taken a very aggressive stand. Yeah. They're below sea level, although they don't have the potential catastrophe of hurricanes. They have massive dike systems that can stem the tide of the ocean. And I think that if the will is there, the way is there, if the will is there, and I think that we can make these, you know, the levees are dirt. I mean, the dikes in Holland are steel, and they're very complex. They're very...
If the Dutch can do it, let's do it for New Orleans. We've got it, Gina, and we hear your heart going out to that city. I want to welcome into our conversation from Washington, Anthony Yeazer. He's professor of economics at George Washington University. Was on the National Academy of Sciences panel on disaster research needs. Anthony Yeazer, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Here we see a major American city underwater for weeks, maybe months. What do you make of it as an economist, the challenge here?
Well, I'd rather talk in general about our policy towards disasters in this country, and then New Orleans would be a special case. And the problem is, how do we handle disaster-prone areas? I mean, currently, actually, our disaster policy is kind of a disaster.
Why?
Well, we have a flood insurance program that supposedly is a tax on disaster-prone areas designed to reflect the price of potential disasters and cause people to develop with caution, but there's no enforcement that requires you to join the NFIP.
That is because flood insurance costs extra. It's supposed to be a kind of bump in the road, but it's not required, so it doesn't work.
Well, it's supposedly required. We don't enforce the law. I mean, like a lot of the laws, we don't enforce.
Okay.
And with regard to the issue of development or rebuilding, this is a matter. I mean, we have very fine minds in meteorology, geology, et cetera, that can assess whether or not we can protect New Orleans and what the future hazard is. But then we would have to have the will to abide by whatever their, you know, benefit-cost analysis for the future of New Orleans would be.
And clearly that will or that planning wasn't there as recently as 5 days ago, because New Orleans is underwater right now. Maybe it could be protected, but it wasn't.
Exactly. And I'd like to talk about the political system that makes these decisions. We have a nice contrast because we just had a highway bill where there's, you know, no
huge multi-billion
to the relationship between benefits and costs.
Okay.
Right? We have absurd projects being funded with benefit-cost ratios.
The bridges to nowhere in Alaska and all the rest, we recall it. So
exactly. On the other hand, we then Congress had BRAC, where they attempted to, behind a veil of ignorance, or insulate the economists and the technical people.
BRAC, I don't know what you mean.
Base realignment and closing.
Oh, yes, of course. Right, right.
Inside the Beltway, I use acronyms. Now, in that particular case, they let technical experts make a decision, and then you have to have an up or down vote on all the recommendations.
What does this have to do with New Orleans?
Well, what we find there is, if you have to make these geographically specific decisions, if you require the political process to do it, you get a disaster. You get the highway bill. If, in fact, you can find a device to insulate the political process, such as the military base closing, which is the second, by the way, this is the second time we've done the military.
So you're saying if the technocrats were in charge, New Orleans would not be underwater now?
I'm saying that we can make rational decisions behind that veil of ignorance. The political system won't do it.
Should this city be rebuilt as it was, where it is?
I don't have the technical expertise to decide that, but I have every confidence that under our current system, it will be, whether it's a good idea or not.
Let's get another call. Carl's calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Carl, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. Well, to make my point, I have to take us back to our old nuclear Holocaust scenarios against the Soviet Union. And we were told 15 to 30 minutes that a nuke could hit any major city from the Soviet Union.
Okay.
Well, they saw this storm coming at New Orleans for a week. They had a week to evacuate this city. I'm very disappointed in the state, the city, and our federal government.
But Carl, we were told that 80% of New Orleans was evacuated. That doesn't sound bad on the face of it.
Exactly. But see, people don't realize that New Orleans is a very impoverished city. Very impoverished city. So you have people that's just not able to get in a car to go somewhere.
Yeah.
You can sit on the top of a roof and yell, "Get out, get out, get out." But if the people can't get out, then what are they to do? And on top of that, this exposes the bad politicians in New Orleans. This exposes the levee system that's just absolutely horrendous. And this is coming from a guy that's lived there. My mother lived in New Orleans. She got out of New Orleans and got to Baton Rouge.
So what should be done now, Carl, when you look at it? What should happen now?
What should be done? The city need to be shooken up, turned upside down, wiped out, and rebuilt. The levee system, like the gentleman that called before me, need to be redone. This is a system that's in place that's 100 years too old. We really need to get a better system in place for the people in New Orleans, economically, educationally. And if anyone has ever been in the city of New Orleans, you know exactly what I mean.
Yeah, and I have many times, and I do know what you mean. And there's being more exposed here than just a weakness in the levee, Carl. We appreciate your call. Stephen French, many references here, and we're not finished looking at this here at On Point, but the scenes of the hurricane destruction have also kind of lifted a rock on all kinds of social problems, focused the national attention in New Orleans and right along the Gulf Coast here.
It's quite typical that those with the least resources are the most vulnerable to these kinds of things, that the middle-class folks can take their SUV drive and stay at the Hilton 100 miles up the road. It's really the poor and the folks that don't have resources that are impacted both in the short term and the long term by these events. I think if you look at what happened to, say, the rental housing stock in Oakland, California, when we had the Loma Prieta earthquake, virtually wiped out and not rebuilt, and basically that whole population displaced. And I think that that is typical. As a number of people have said, New Orleans is an exceptionally poor city. And we said 80% of the people were evacuated. That leaves 100,000 people there who were not evacuated, many of whom did not have the means to evacuate themselves and were left in harm's way.
But now being ordered out of town as lawlessness has set in there, that's been getting worse, at least up till today. We'll see how today unfolds. George is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, George, you're on the air.
Thank you. If we are going to rebuild the Gulf Coast, the thing that we need to do is restore the coastal wetlands, which provide a buffer for storm surges. We've learned this in the tsunami, and we've talked about it now here in Katrina. And if we are going to build, we have to build with a larger ecological consciousness, design with nature, please.
Do you think it's still possible? You've seen the shots of that coastline. It's so heavily industrialized.
I'm not an expert. The thing that I'm worried about here in Cambridge is how am I going to keep warm this winter, and how are my neighbors going to keep warm, and maybe how am I going to keep fed?
So keep the natural buffers there so that the oil can flow to your furnace in Cambridge. George, we've got it. Tom Campanella. How about the ecological part of this? We've got a toxic stew headed for the Gulf. We've got a coast that's been just stripped down to industrial bones.
Right.
Is there an environmental component that's necessary to ensuring a better future?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's no question that if you trace all the problems that the environmental problems that New Orleans has, if you trace them back far enough, it all comes down to not really paying much attention or respect to the ecological structure of the landscape and the delta of the Mississippi there at the mouth of the Mississippi. And I think, you know, this city has been there. It's been there for many centuries. It's not going to disappear. We've crossed the Rubicon of sorts. Now I think we really need to focus on engineering our way out of catastrophes like this in the future. And that includes smart, ecologically intelligent, sustainable approaches to creating a city that's safe in the future from natural disasters.
Anthony
Yeager,
we can't
just wipe it off the map. I mean, that's certainly...
Mother Nature's been doing her best on that front lately. Anthony Yeager, as an economic matter, is that the way you see it? We've just got a minute here, but do you say build it back, spend what it takes? Is that the way it does work? It should work.
I go back to my notion that this is really a technical matter, can't answer it off the top of my head, but the problem is we need to get this out of the political system, because the political system will rebuild it even if the return is 10 cents on the dollar. And as our society, we can't afford to make too many more investments where the return is 10 cents on the dollar.
Stephen French, can you picture a different New Orleans? A New Orleans that's further upstream? I don't know.
One point on that. I think the big question, if we do rebuild, and we certainly rebuild to some extent, but the key question, I think, is who pays? Is it paid for locally, or is it paid for by the entire nation?
Isn't it a national obligation?
I think that's an open question.
Wow. Well,
my opinion also,
and I think we can rebuild. Certainly, we can engineer anything we want. We can put a man on the moon. We can rebuild a site, but the question is it economically smart to do so? But one could see a smaller New Orleans with better protection, better maintained levees, more concentrated in the higher parts of the city, so it's not spread over the whole area, and really maybe not as many of the poor areas that are really left exposed to this kind of thing. So one could certainly see, even if we're willing to spend the money, raising the level. We could actually fill in large parts of this bowl.
It's
very expensive. We can see construction techniques such as we elevate like we do on coastal barrier islands. There are a lot of things that we can do. The question is, can we afford it, and is it worth the cost?
There's the big question sitting right on the table, and I thank each of you for helping us look at that this morning. Stephen French at the Georgia Institute of Technology joining us from Atlanta. Thank you very much for being with us.
Nice to be here.
Anthony Yaser at George Washington University in Washington. Mr. Yaser, thank you for joining us.
A pleasure to talk to you.
And Thomas Campanella in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, the University of North Carolina there, co-editor of The Resilient City, How Modern Cities Recover from Disaster. Thomas Campanella, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Listeners, for more information on how you can help victims of Hurricane Katrina, go to our website, onpointradio.org. Be generous. At this hour, evacuation efforts at the Superdome are on hold. The decision was made after reports that shots had been fired at a military helicopter helping in the evacuation. The plan is to move more than 20,000 people who sought shelter there to another stadium, the Houston Astrodome. A few busloads managed to leave last night. Refugees arrived in Houston very early this morning. Terry Langford is state reporter for the Houston Chronicle. She joins me now for the latest. Terry, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Just got a few minutes here. So you've got refugees essentially from New Orleans now pouring into the Houston Astrodome. How's that going?
It's a little frantic down here. All told, we have about 100,000 evacuees from Mississippi and Louisiana, including that 23,000 that'll be coming into the Astrodome. So far by 8 a.m., we have over 3,000 into the Astrodome, and school officials as well as health and county officials are trying to accommodate them.
The big question here seems to be, as we're being told, it could be months, possibly many months, before homes are inhabitable again in New Orleans. How long are these people going to be in Houston, and how is that going to work?
Well, as Mayor Bill White said yesterday, it's a learning experience, and we're basically learning hour by hour. We've never had anything like this. We've had our own storms, but nothing where we had to sustain housing for quite this long.
We've seen a lot of children at the Superdome in New Orleans. Presumably, they will be among those who have already come to Houston. Are they going to be enrolled in Houston schools?
Yes, they will be enrolled in Houston schools. The school system is expecting roughly 10,000 at the uptick to come in. Right now, they're waiving things like immunization just to get these kids in. There'll be temporary classrooms in the Astrodome. Plus, for older students, what they're going to do is open up vacant campuses nearest the Astrodome for them.
The Superdome turned into a pretty ugly situation. You know, facilities all clogged up and people angry and at wit's end, shots fired outside. Is the Astrodome at risk of seeing the same development, or is it going to be more orderly?
Well, they're trying their best right now. All county officials and the city are working to ensure the safety and the security of that area. Also, Mayor White said yesterday at a press availability that, you know, they are working to find employment and not just, you know, something with dignity, something that doesn't mean, you know, it's just sort of a handout, but get people involved in the economy and back on their feet.
So is it a disaster shelter at the Astrodome, or is it a refugee camp?
Well, Mayor Bill White called it yesterday the first thing that he's ever seen in his lifetime where America's dealing with a domestic refugee situation, and that's what he's calling it.
Did he say days, weeks, months?
No one wants to put any kind of time limit, but as we can see from the pictures that are coming from New Orleans, it will be months.
Wow.
And we're just trying to figure out what to do once they get here.
What a picture. American refugees in Houston. Terry Langford, state reporter for the Houston Chronicle, thank you for joining us.
No problem.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation at onpointradio.org. You can also find information there on how to help victims of Hurricane Katrina. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Julie Jopp, Eileen Amada, Stefano Katsonis, Matt Lieber, James Ross, Christina Russo, and Karen Schiffman. Our senior producer is Joe O'Connor. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.